You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we are embracing the elements, exploring what our state parks offer in the winter. You might be surprised to find lots of campgrounds are open during the winter season, and the bonus is that there are a whole lot less traffic, lots of, you know, fewer people, and think snowshoe hikes and groomed ski trails boasting spectacular high views of our winter landscape. The ideas start right now with your suggestions. Which state parks have you already explored this winter? What did you see? What did you do? Which state parks do you hope to visit while the snow is here, especially in northern parts of Wisconsin? We're at 800-642-1234. Missy Van Landit is External Relations Chief with the Parks and Rec Management Program. That's part of the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Missy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with some of these upcoming events. On New Year's Day, there are all sorts of organized hikes. More than a dozen parks do these hikes. What can we expect from the first day hikes?
Well, you know, what's interesting about the first day hikes, that's actually a national program. So last year, there were just a little over, I think, several thousand hikes across the nation. Most states participate. Hundreds of thousands of people participate in hikes on New Year's Day. So Wisconsin, this year we have our high of 14 hikes, which is usually we have about 8 to 10. So, you know, a lot more properties participating. It's usually a cooperative event with our friends groups, and they lead different segments of hikes at 14 different properties. So kind of a new experience. It'll vary, obviously, across the state, but 14 properties doing, you know, encouraging people to get out and get healthy and start the year off right.
And as you look at the landscape right now in Wisconsin, having our two different climates right now, in the south, very warm, no snow, in the north, snowy, these hikes could be wildly different on what to expect.
They could. You know, usually my family and I frequent Mirror Lake. We tend to go to Mirror Lake every year. Last year, I actually have a picture of my kids underneath some low pine trees getting covered in snow and complaining for half the hike because they couldn't move because of their snowshoes and their snow pants and their boots. This year, they might be in vests and a sweatshirt. So, you know, it does vary wildly or widely across the state. And, you know, up north, we've got Peninsula and Newport, which will be very, very snowy. The hikes usually range from 1 to 3 miles and are generally pretty average ability. So you can really make these hikes what you want. And they're all over the state from the northeast to the northwest and in the southeast and southwest.
And a cool thing is, too, is volunteers who are leading these hikes, they have a vested interest in making sure that you're going to have a really lovely time on this hike because they probably know the trails and they know the scenery and topography.
They do. Most of the volunteers are members of the friends group. And so they've probably been out there making sure the trail's ready to go. And there's in the south, again, there's no sticks and things down. And in the north, that the trails are nice and packed down for a good experience. And they're probably have been out there nearly every day just doing their own forms of recreation. So they are very interested in the properties, vested in the properties, and can give you a neat history and a little lesson on the overall property history there.
So how did the DNR decide where to hold these hikes and which state parks would be part of this?
You know, we really leave it up to the managers. It's the holiday season. They all have holiday things to do. And if you've been to our state parks in the summer, you know, most of our staff work pretty much 7 days a week. So we don't, while we encourage the staff to participate, it's not something that we require as mandatory. So for us to have 14 of these, both our property staff are enthused and engaged in this and our friends groups as well. So we really leave it up to them to decide.
We're exploring Wisconsin state parks in the winter. Our guide is Missy Van Landit from the state DNR. You can join the conversation anytime this hour. Join in at 800-642-1234. So what is your favorite state park in the winter? Which state parks have you already explored this season? And what did you see? Where did you go? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us WPR Mornings. Missy, there's a whole lot of wildlife to see at our state parks. And this time of year, when lots of birds have migrated south, other animals are hibernating. What might we see out there?
That's a really good question. You know, you're definitely going to see deer. You know, even as I've been traveling across the state, especially now with so much snow in the north, you're going to see a lot more deer, more fox, squirrels, all that kind of stuff, because they're not used to this much snow already. So they're going to be out foraging. So I would expect you'd see quite a bit of that. You are still going to see some of the birds. You know, even on Christmas morning, I saw cardinals out in the trees. So, you know, you're still going to see a lot of different things. But I think especially up north where there's snow, you're going to see so many more out and closer and calm as you're moving around on these trails.
It's important to stay hydrated during exercise, but won't your water freeze in colder temperatures? How do you do those hikes when it is really cold?
You know, a lot of people still bring backpacks. You know, what's interesting is so many people bring the insulated ones where it can stay cold, but it can stay warm. But, you know, I've had some in my car for several days that never freeze if they're in the insulated mugs. So even keeping a little bit of ice in there. So many of our friends groups too have little like trailhead stations where they're serving hot cocoa and things like that as well. The nice thing is most of these hikes, like I said, are 1 to 3 miles. So usually about an hour for you to do that. The longer hikes, though, that could be a problem.
So 1 to 3 miles in general, these are the first day hikes that you're looking at, which is a really kind of a nice, comfortable distance for many who aren't out hiking every day.
Exactly. And a lot of them are different loops. And so you can choose when you get there if you're up for a 3 mile hike, especially in the snow, that could take a couple of hours. But they're meant to be geared towards folks that have varying disabilities, varying ages, whether you want to bring your children or your parents. So,
well, speaking of kids, I understand your kids got snowshoes for Christmas.
They did. They actually knew what they were when they pulled them out. And so I've got a pair and they're really excited, but they were questioning where all the snow is. So we're going to maybe have to go north in the next few weeks so they can enjoy them.
Can you give us some tips on snowshoes and how you use them for the first time?
You know, many people have said, don't get the poles right away. That was the easiest way to learn. So I did have poles with mine, but I didn't use them. And we actually did not get poles with the kids. So I actually got my kids are 5 and 7, but I got them a little bit big, so they'll still fit, but they'll be able to use them for the next few years. And it's just like walking. So you can use them on the hiking trails. The only place you can't use them is on groomed ski trails. So lots of opportunity to get out. And we were actually up in the Northern Highlands where the snow is pretty deep and it's very difficult to hike because you'll sink in. So having snowshoes or being able to rent them is advantageous to getting out on some of the trails up north.
And so those snowshoes, they can work on some packed trails, but also in fresh snow that's pretty deep.
Exactly. You know, it's nice, especially with the first day hikes, we tend to try to pack those down, and with the number of people they get packed down. But having snowshoes just makes that a nice, easy hike. But you can use them where the trails have not been used at all and the snow's pretty deep to be able to stay on top and navigate that. And snowshoes have come a long way. If you haven't seen snowshoes in years, they're not the old webbed ones. While some people do still use
those. That's what I see in my head.
Yeah. You know, and I think the nice thing is they're pretty affordable to rent and they're pretty affordable to buy if you're willing to make the investment in something that, you know, at least up north, you could use almost daily. So, you know, there's something for me I use and bring with me on my work trips, and I hope to just get out and spend a little bit of time outdoors.
And you can rent them, too, at some of the state parks?
You can. They're actually free at Devil's Lake. So if you wanted to go up to Devil's Lake, you can use them there. Many state parks do rent them. And there's a lot of communities that the parks reside in where you can rent snowshoes, skis, and fat bikes as well.
We are on a winter state parks expedition with the DNR's Missy Van Landit. More than 1 million acres of national forest, by the way, to explore just outside your four-season tent. Have you tried winter camping in Wisconsin? How did it go? Were you able to find a site in a state park? What do you think after visiting our parks in the winter? Bring your stories, your questions, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment, more Wisconsin Weekend with Missy Van Landit right here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're touring state parks in the winter here on Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Winter activities in our states range from comfortable to extreme. You can set out on a trail that goes for days, toting all your winter gear. That would be more on the extreme end. Or opt for a candlelight hike as a new way to bond with your friends. Let's put that in the comfort category. There are dozens of candlelight hikes on the calendar this winter all over the state. What is your favorite state park to visit this season? What draws you there? What are your favorite places to hike or pitch a tent in the darkest days? Join in with all things state parks, 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. Missy Van Landit from the state DNR stays with us. So Missy, in January through March, a bunch of state parks host these candlelight events. What do you love about them?
You know, it's a great way for people to fall in love with state parks. I've been with the parks program about 10 years, but one of my first candlelight experiences was at Newport, and it couldn't have been more perfect.
Which is way up in Door County.
Tip. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's one of the dark sky parks. And so we were hiking and all of the candles were out and it started snowing gently and you're in the woods and you've got your hot chocolate and it was just a perfect experience. It's such a neat way to explore state parks and trails and forests in a whole different venue at night.
And so Newport will have another one of these coming up?
They will. I'm scanning for the day here. There's 41 of these candlelight hikes over the next 2 months.
So they're not all in your head.
They're not
right?
all in my head by day. But if the first few are coming up January 4th. We did hold a few in December, which were very well attended. The next ones are Blue Mound and Mirror Lake on January 4th. And then they continue all the way through Saturday, March 14th.
And so these candlelight hikes, they occur when it's dark, but about what time are we looking at?
Generally, they start around 6 o'clock. They do vary. Mm-hmm. So if you actually go onto the DNR webpage, wi.dnr.gov, and type in candlelight, you'll be able to get the full list and you'll see what time it starts at the particular property that you're interested in. And you also see the trailhead location.
And these trails then are lit by luminarias or some type of candles in a bag?
They are. Yeah. So usually all of these events, just like the first day hikes, are cooperative events with the friends groups. So if you're interested in volunteering, it does take quite a volunteer force to put these candles together. They're usually candles in a bag with sand in it. Some of them, for the ones who've been doing this a while, they may be battery operated so that they last a little bit longer and the wind doesn't blow them out. But our managers are and our friends groups are very used to doing this. One of the neat thing is they at Heritage Hill, they had one in December. That's in Green Bay. They're having another one in January. And they actually do more historic lanterns to match the property. So
explain Heritage Hill a little bit.
Heritage Hill is one of our state historical parks. And so it's a lot like Old World Wisconsin, but on a smaller scale. And so they've got a lot of different historical structures that were brought to that property. And they do about a 1 mile lit trail throughout the property, and you can see Lambeau Field and Green Bay, and it's right on the Fox River. So you can get very urban experiences like that one, or very remote like Newport or other properties across the state.
And so you might be snowshoeing, you might be hiking. There are different types of ways you can explore these parks at night. And are you in a larger group, or how does that work?
For most of the candlelight hikes, it's come and do this at your own pace. And okay. There is skiing as well at some of them, which is kind of neat, on groomed ski trails. So you can come with your friends or family. Again, there's usually a trailhead where there's information about the friends group and an opportunity to make a small donation if you'd like. And then you kind of go at your own pace. Some people do bring headlamps or flashlights. You certainly don't need them. My kids love to bring them and make sure they don't shine them in people's eyes as they're looking around. But it's really go at your own pace. And again, they're usually short hikes, usually 1 to 3 miles or snowshoe or ski. So between 1 and 2 hours. And there's usually hot chocolate, cider, coffee, maybe some cookies at
perhaps
the end of the hike.
Perhaps a bonfire?
Usually at many of them there is, just to warm up a little bit. Exactly.
We are traveling to Wisconsin State Parks in the winter. Our guide is Missy Van Landit from the State State DNR. You can join in. What do you think after visiting our parks in the winter? Do they have enough offerings? What would you like to see change? Do you have any ideas for events? Join in with your experiences, your suggestions, your questions. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Missy, is there any extra cost to attend these candlelight events or first day hikes?
There usually isn't. We do have some that have really grown in size. So Lapham Peak is one of those. We started, our friends groups have Facebook pages. And so you can find these events there. They're also co-sponsored and found on the DNR Facebook page as well. So where there's so much more access to these. And so we have started some programs where you need to reserve ahead of time. So you may want to check some of those out. But there isn't a cost. If they continue to grow and we run out of space, we may start to charge in the future something nominal that would go back to the trails. But right now they're all free. But you do need a park sticker for most of the properties.
At Lapham Peak, you mentioned. What is that property like, that state park?
You know, Lapham Peak is very interesting. It's one of the only ski trails in the southern part of the state that has man-made snow. So you can actually go ski right now. There's about 1.5 miles that are open right now with really good ski conditions. So usually the hike is not necessarily on those trails, but because they're groomed for skiing, but you can go and do the nighttime skiing there. They do have lit trails at Lapham Peak. There's also the Houseman Nature Center there, which is usually open for the public to see nature exhibits. And they do have a tower there as well. So you can kind of see the landscape around the area.
Well, let's take a call now. Chris is joining us from Manitowoc this morning. Hi, Chris.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm actually doing my first winter camping this February in Kettle Moraine at Long Lake. And last year, trying to find exactly where we could go and couldn't go during the winter. And could you give us a little more information on how you can find sites to camp in the winter for backpacking in, or even bringing a small rugged camper?
Sure. You know, one of the things that we're working on, we do have a new reservation system, Camas. And so this year we're working on getting all of our winter camping sites put onto that reservation system. They're not all on there. So we recognize your challenge, Chris, of finding where all of those are. One of the best things to do, most properties do have some winter camping sites, whether that's 1, 2, 3, or 10. So what I would do is recommend is you just find the property that you're interested in going to. Again, most of them do have winter camping, and just giving them a call. Most of the sites are usually walk-in and aren't booked ahead of time anyway. Not a lot of people, you'd be surprised, do winter camping. But I will tell you that last weekend, over Christmas, there was a lot of camping, especially in the southern part of the state.
I bet, with these temperatures.
Enjoying this 50-degree weather. Uh-huh. But most properties do offer it, Chris. So if you want to just give the specific property that you're looking at a call, most properties do have a site or two.
Chris, what attracts you to winter camping?
Oh, I guess it's just it's quieter. It's less people around, so you're able to enjoy the atmosphere and the park and nature basically a lot more than you can when there's 5,000 people skirming around.
Have you done it before?
Only in like remote cabins, but not in a tent. And that was another question I had is, do you need to have I have a really good sleeping bag at minus 30, but and a mat, but as far as a tent, you need to have a four-winter tent, or can you manage with a really good three-season tent?
You know, that's a good question. There are several staff that I know and friends that do winter camping. I personally don't, but they use their summer tents and they really just prepare. I know that there are specific tents where you can do through wall heating with like propane heat and things like that, that are safe, that have the carbon monoxide detectors on them. But many of the folks that I know do just prepare with layers, with the double sleeping bags, maybe a couple dogs to keep them warm, and then usually the pad to go on. So I think it really depends on, you know, are you camping in 30 below, or are you camping in 30 degrees? So, you know, most folks do use their summer ones, but there are four season and there are specific ones for winter camping.
Chris, what are your parks on your list here that you would really like to explore in the winter?
Is it Copper Falls up in northern part of the state, not far from Bayfield, I think it is. It's a really beautiful park, and I think it'd be pretty neat to see that with, especially if it's not too cold, if there's some of the water still running on the falls in that area, it would be beautiful.
Copper Falls is amazing. That's one of my favorite parks. It's in Mellon. So you're right. It is just south of Bayfield, maybe, and south of Ashland, maybe 20 minutes, 30 minutes south of Ashland. And just a beautiful park. And one of those where you can, exactly, Chris, experience the waterfalls in all different seasons. When they're raging in the spring after snowmelt, during the summer when you've got a lot of wildlife, in the fall with the fall color, and then in the winter where you've got some of the falls frozen and some of the falls still flowing.
Are there really good hikes around there?
There are. There's a lot of really neat hikes, and there's a lot of history to Copper Falls as well. And you're within a lot of different areas where you can get up to a lot of national forest and other national park or national forest lands and other state park lands up there. But there are really wonderful hikes. They've got beautifully groomed ski trails up there. So I would highly recommend if you're a cross country skier to check that out.
Oh, Chris, thanks so much for calling in and have a great trip. We are exploring state parks in the winter with the DNR's Missy Van Landit as our guide. She's here. Fabulous tips and motivation to explore our parks in the winter. Which ones will you visit this season? What do you want to see and do? How do you stay warm? Do you do winter camping like Chris? Do you have a New Year's resolution to visit particular state parks in 2020? Join in with your questions, your tips, 800-642-1234. We'll continue with the DNR's Missy Van Landit right after this news update here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. We are touring state parks across our state in the winter. A shout out to state parks with first day hikes on Wednesday, starting the new year connected to nature. There's Buckhorn, Interstate, Devil's Lake, Mirror Lake, Newport, Peninsula, Rochecree, and Straight Lake. We have links over on the morning show page at WPR.org. Missy Van Landit is External Relations Chief with the Parks and Rec Management Program at the State DNR, and she stays with us. So, Missy, before we move on from cross-country skiing, have you tried cross-country skiing at night?
I haven't tried it at night.
You haven't tried it at night yet.
I can barely do it during the day, quite honestly. You know, I can classic ski pretty well, but to do the skate skiing is a challenge. I will tell you, I tried it first at Lake Caganza, which has beautifully groomed trails, and I fell flat on my face right out of the gate. So it's an acquired motion to be able to do that. But so many people just love it, and there are options for candlelight skis across the state as well.
Yeah, I'm going to have to try because I was a cross-country skier in my youth, a skate skier in particular on my high school team. And I still have my skis packed away and just have never gotten them back out. So anything close by in Madison that you would suggest?
For skiing? Yeah, you know, if we get snow down here, you know, right now, like we said, you can go to Lapham Peak, which is wonderful. And there are ski rentals there. Mm-hmm. Out here, Blue Mound, you can go to Lake Caganza, Devil's Lake. Mirror Lake has groomed trails. Devil's Lake doesn't groom, even though there are some trails that you can go on. They're more of a snowshoe hike park, but Mirror Lake has wonderful ones. So there are plenty around the Madison area, but there's ski trails, groomed ski trails across the state that are open right now.
So there is the second, an event at Willow River State Park near Hudson on the western side of the state, which is part of this health-minded events coming up in the new year?
Yeah, we've got two events, one January 11th at Lapham Peak and one February 1st at Willow River State Park. They're called Out We Go Snow. There is a $5 admission to those, but really the purpose is to get people out and active and introduce them to winter recreation. So if you wanted to get back into skiing, both places will have the ability for you to use or rent skis or snowshoes or get on a fat bike and try all of this winter rec for the first time for free.
Well, let's take another call now. Sandy is in Eau Claire. Hi, Sandy.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, just have a question. My husband and I are heading next week into the Northern Highland American Legion State Forest to, and I guess that's part of the park system, to do some camping. And we are not familiar with it at all, just kind of near some family where we're going to be visiting, and wondered if you have any knowledge or suggestions about that.
You know, the Northern Highlands is a property that is one of my favorites year-round. You know, in the summer, there's biking and swimming and fishing and hiking and all kinds of stuff. In the winter, it's equally as beautiful. There are a number of trails up there. If you go onto the DNR's webpage and just type in Northern Highland and then you find the trails section, it'll give you a really nice description of all the trails in the Northern Highlands. There are some that are groomed for fat biking. There's so many that you can hike or snowshoe, many that are groomed for skiing as well. And there's so many different campgrounds. What I love, though, is that the trails are really, really nicely laid out. It tells you which ones you need to have a trail pass for, which ones you don't. And the nice thing is, Sandy, if you wanted to try some of these things, actually right in Minocqua are places that rent skis, snowshoes, and fat bikes. And they usually rent them for whether it's an hour or a day or half day. So you can, and pretty cost effective, anywhere from $15 to $30 for a half day. So you can try all those things out on the trails. There's so many. I wish I had some in front of you. If one of the things I always do is actually just call some of the properties. The managers and the staff that work there know these properties the best. So I would just find the number on the webpage and give them a call, and they can help you plan your trip as well.
Sandy, why did you pick out this particular state park?
Well, we're celebrating a kind of a late Christmas up there in my near Tomahawk, and we wanted to find a place. And it looks like that the Clear Lake Campground, it says, is the only one of that big area that is open for winter camping. So we'll be heading to that one. And my husband, we have fat bikes, snowshoe. We're going to try to do a little bit of everything.
Oh, wonderful. And do you feel like you have the right gear to do winter camping? Have you done it before? Sounds like it.
No, we have a conversion van, so we're kind of going to be, we don't have to be out in the cold too much. So it should be fine. Yeah. So, but we've never really done much with winter camping, just one day a few weeks ago. So we're looking forward to it.
Oh, Sandy, thanks so much for calling in. Missy, people can do fat tire biking at a number of events. Do state parks have groomed trails for winter bicyclists?
You know, we have very few that are actually groomed. Right now, we're still working on new policy for grooming. You can ride a fat bike anywhere that you can ride a bike that doesn't have a winter use. So a lot of times in our state parks, I know it sounds confusing, a lot of times in our state parks, our bike trails might be a groomed ski trail in the winter. So therefore, you can't fat bike on it. But a number of properties do have bike trails that are not anything else other than now they're fat bike trails in the winter. So we do have some properties that groom, some that don't. Grooming is pretty new in the fat biking world, and so a lot of our volunteers or friends groups or properties don't have the groomers on hand quite yet, but some do. So I would suggest you can search that on our webpage, or you can call properties that you may know of.
Another cool thing about these nighttime events that local astronomy clubs bring telescopes out to some of these events. Is that right?
They do. Yeah. You know, it's really neat, especially looking for a clearing, whether it's like at Newport, it's a dark sky property. So, you know, if we do have a nice clear night, but that brings up a good point. And there's lots of different activities that folks do, you know, whether that's the camping, the astronomy, hiking, the fat biking that you can do at night. Our properties still do close at their normal times all winter. So you can get out and experience those things at night, whether it's a sponsored event or not.
We are exploring Wisconsin state parks in the winter. Our guide is Missy Van Landit from the state DNR. And you can join in with your questions, your tips, your suggestions. And she has suggestions for you as well. Which state parks do you like to go exploring in the winter? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Missy, how will state park admission prices change in 2020? What is the lay of the land there?
They're not changing at all. So you can actually, many folks don't realize on December 1st, you can buy your next year's pass and use it for the month of December. So in-state annual passes are still $28. And I will tell you, I went to the movie over Christmas, and with a family of five or so, and it was $110 to go to the movie with popcorn. So $28 is quite a bargain for the year, and then they are a reduced rate for your second vehicle for your home. And you can get those at the properties when you get there. We've got new electronic pay stations. So instead of putting your cash in the envelope and putting it into the big iron, what we call an iron ranger, you can now pull up to, I think it is over 13 of our properties, and you can put a credit card in a machine and it will spit out your ticket. So really new opportunities for selling admission passes now. But
and really no more mailing stuff in or you know doing it that way as well. You can actually do it on site.
You can. You can do that on site. And you can actually, FWSP.org, it's our Friends of Wisconsin State Parks, FWSP.org. They sell online stickers. So you'll be able to get yours online there. And they're usually mailed out within 8 to 10 days.
How does the DNR decide where and when to raise prices? You know, is it based on volume or how busy a park is?
You know, we do demand-based pricing for our camping. And so what we look at is the weekends that are June, July, August that are really highly populated. Part of that, those prices will go up. But the weekdays in the shoulder season, spring and fall, those will go down. So we operate on demand-based pricing for camping. And then we do have different pricing for some of our more popular parks for day passes like Willow River, Peninsula, and Devil's Lake. Mm-hmm. So we really just base that more on demand and occupancy. Part of it is to manage, you know, we say to folks, we don't need more people to go to Devil's Lake in the summer. We want more folks to go to Mirror Lake or to Governor Dodge. So we do that based on demand.
Yeah. So you're kind of driving, hopefully being able to drive, shift demand a little bit due to pricing structures.
Exactly.
In a way. So as you look at winter camping and we have people calling in about winter camping, are there something, I mean, you're saying call ahead to the park you're interested in and have a conversation with the person on the other end of the phone. You know, who are they and what is their work like?
You know, most of the folks, we've got visitor service folks and property managers that are there year round. And we obviously ramp up quite a bit in the summer with folks that help take care of the restrooms and the campgrounds and things like that. But, you know, they are very passionate people that get out on their own properties and know them like the back of their hand. And so, you know, calling them primarily weekends is a really good time to catch folks, which is nice because we're, you know, most people are off on the weekends mm-hmm. and we usually tend to staff more at that time. So, you know, winter time is a little bit, we downstaff, obviously, just for less population using the properties. But they're just so passionate and they know the properties so well and they love to talk about it. It's like talking about your spouse or your kids. They love to talk about the properties and help you plan.
And in this world of social media and everything online, it's really neat to say, hey, you know what? Dial up this number and someone on the other end really knows what they're talking about and wants to be able to help you have a really great time at this state park.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of online, there are still our friends groups have pages and the DNR has a Facebook page and we're more than happy to answer questions there as well. And we do quite often, almost daily, answer questions from Facebook and Instagram users as well.
Well, let's take another call. Ron in Weyerhaeuser. Hi, Ron.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to recommend the Flambeau River State Forest as a destination for really any time of the year. Winter is especially beautiful just because it's, you know, what the Flambeau has to sell is solitude. And in the winter season, it's really solitude.
Oh, Ron, well, hold that thought on the Flambeau River. We have to take just a very short break. You can join in your suggestions as well, 800-642-1234. The DNR's Missy Van Landit stays with us for Wisconsin Weekend. Back in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're going all over the state finding out what we can do at state parks in the winter. It's Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and the DNR's Missy Van Landit is here as we look at all the different events happening at our state parks in the winter. Let's go back now to Ron in Weyerhaeuser, who is telling us about Flambeau River State Forest. Ron, what do you love about this area?
Like I said before, it's just sort of... located not around any real large city, so it's sort of in the middle of nowhere. But nowhere can be a pretty good place to be sometimes. So
true, true.
That's really what it has to sell. And upcoming, we have a candlelight ski and a snowshoe hike on February 1st. And it was just so gorgeous walking through that candlelit woods. It's a hemlock hardwood forest. The trail is candlelit, and the people just love it.
Well, Ron, it sounds like you're either involved in a friends group or you should be.
Yeah. I'm very involved with the forest.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Do you have roots there? Did you grow up in the area?
No, actually, I just kind of work around the forest.
Okay, yeah. Missy, what do you love about Flambeau River State Forest?
You know, Ron is exactly right. You know, when you're looking at the forest, and so many of our northern forests are this way, they're just, a lot of folks don't know the difference between, it sounds like Ron does, the difference between a forest and a state park. But, you know, one of the things that you can capture, I think more so in the forest, especially in the winter, is that solitude. But you can capture that anywhere. You know, we talked so much today about all of these different events, but Ron has a great point, you know, where in the winter, you can find that solitude at pretty much every property. You know, I was hiking, or I was snowshoeing a couple of years ago at Peninsula, actually, where you'd think there'd be so many people out, and I thought someone was following me, and it was just the sound of my snowshoes, and it was just me. It was just me at this very popular state park. So I think what's really neat is, Ron's exactly right, you know, the solitude and being out there with nature, feeling that cold air come in and just enjoying the wildlife around you, the eagles, the deer, and just getting some time in your own head and being able to be outside by yourself is really such a treasure.
Well, Sandy was talking about doing some quasi-winter camping with the van as well. Are there any cabins for people who want to sleep warm at night?
We do have a number of cabins for folks with accessibility needs, and those are really the only ones. Actually, it's in state statute that there's no lodging in state parks in Wisconsin. So many other states do have that, but we only have accessible cabins. And some of those are rented year-round and some are not. So we do have a webpage for folks to find out more about that. And it's called Open the Outdoors. So if you search that. But other than that, we don't have any lodging in state parks.
We have still a lot of high peaks and overviews, bluffs. Is it safe to hike up those bluffs in the winter?
It is. You know, someone was actually telling me, I'm going to Devil's Lake on Christmas to hike, and is it going to be slippery? Is it going to be icy? And I said, you know, it very well might be. But as long as you stay on the trails and are mindful of what's around you, It, just like anywhere else, there's always risk when you're out and about. But we try to make sure that our trails and things like that are safe. But that does bring up a good point where if we do have slippery or icy overlooks and things like that, sometimes we do close them, especially if they're associated with one of these candlelight or first day hikes. That might be one of the reasons you see some of those are canceled if the trails are ice covered.
So because you've gone to so many state parks, almost all of them, or perhaps all of them by now, you love to tell us about little ones that are off the beaten path that we should perhaps take a little bit more time and maybe try out. What ones are off the beaten path and that maybe, you know, that deserve a little bit of a boost?
Yeah, you know, this year is going to be a great year at Patterson State Park. So if you're willing to take an adventure up to Superior area, Patterson is celebrating their 100th anniversary this year.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, cool. They've actually got a winter celebration on January 25th to kick it off, but they've got a number of events throughout the year, and they're just really excited to showcase their property. They're redeveloping all the trails after the flooding. So I would check out Patterson. It's really neat and snow-covered right now.
Well, Missy, thank you so much for joining us.
It was great to be here. Thank you.
Missy Van Landit is External Relations Chief with the Parks and Rec Management Program at the State DNR. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about religion, music, and family in time for Hanukkah.
Music is a cornerstone of Jewish culture, especially during holidays and festivals. Musician Lil Rev grew up in a musical family in Milwaukee, steeped in his family's Yiddish folk music tradition. He travels the country sharing his love of music, history, and his heritage.
Well, I started playing guitar at about the age of 12. Paid for a couple of lessons, and then from there went about learning from anyone I could and listening to records and trying to figure out songs like so many of us often do. My grandfather played mouth organ, and my mom sang a lot of Broadway songs, and my grandparents did a lot of old Yiddish folk music, so I did grow up around a lot of music. My dad was a huge music fan. I always was bringing home records. I remember dancing around the house, everything from the Kingston Trio to Harry Belafonte to Herb Albert and the Tijuana Brass, and all kind of music that my dad was listening to at the time I was subjected to. But, I knew that I wasn't destined to be Ozzy Osbourne. And I had grown up with all this great folk music, like the Yiddish stuff. But, when you grow up, that's just something that grandpa does. And it's not necessarily hip or cool. But as you get a little bit older, you see, I don't have to go really looking too far for a sense of authenticity, because I grew up around it. My grandparents, that was about as authentic as it got. Singing songs of the old country, Tumba Laika and Oifen Pripichik and some of the classic Yiddish stuff. And, if you've seen Fiddler on the Roof, that our people are people of tradition. And I became really interested in the history of the music as much as performing it. I think to this day I enjoy the stories and the history of the music almost as much as I do interpreting a lot of it and writing my own songs as well. As I became a musician, my heroes oftentimes were my next door neighbors. There's a guy in Milwaukee named Paul Melrude who I regularly still get together with. He's in his early 90s, and his door is always open for me to come and work on old Yiddish songs with him and pronunciations and things like that. So it's that human connection that I'm drawn to more so than anything. And when I can sing a song that I actually learned from someone like that, it means a whole lot more than any tune I will have ever learned off of an old long-playing record, because it's the real deal. I guess if you don't know where you came from, you'll never get where you're going, or something along those lines, right? I feel like one foot should always be rooted in that tradition. My grandfather, he had all these little wise sayings, and of course most of them had Yiddish connotations about work and work ethic and stuff like that. He'd say things like, "We've all been riding on the coattails of those who've gone down before." So I guess it's always been important to me to acknowledge the road that was blazed by those who came before, and the gratitude that we should all have for those who opened doors for us.
That story on Wisconsin musician Lil Rev was produced by Erica Janik, the former host of Wisconsin Life. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Want to make sure you catch every Wisconsin Life story? Subscribe to our podcast and find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Maureen McCollum.
And Wisconsin Life is part of our weekly edition of Wisconsin Weekend here on The Morning Show. What's happening in your part of the state that could reach all corners of Wisconsin? Send your ideas for Wisconsin Weekend to mornings@wpr.org. That's mornings@wpr.org, and we'll explore your tip for a future Wisconsin Weekend program. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is Wisconsin Weekend on The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.